Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. Stone, and this is going to be a good one.
Hey, I've been looking forward to this segment for some time. First up on Atlanta Business Radio this morning, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce managing partner with Foundry 45. Please join me in welcoming to the broadcast, Mr. Dave Beck. How are you, man?
I'm well. Thanks so much for having me here.
Foundry 45, what are you guys doing for folks?
So Foundry 45 builds virtual reality experiences that help businesses improve their sales and marketing efforts. So kind of much like the advent of the internet several years back and then mobile, you know, beyond that, we feel like virtual reality is kind of the next new wave of technology that allows businesses to actually connect with their customers.
Now, I have had the opportunity to play a little bit with some of the early renditions of the goggle glasses thing, and I've got the Google Cardboard thing for your phone to fit in. Is this utilizing that technology, or are you building your own kind of infrastructure? Are you building the hardware, or are you using the hardware that already exists?
So we do two things. We create virtual reality experiences. So for groups like AT&T, we've created trade show and event marketing experiences that help them, you know, get their story across to their customers and crush their lead gen goals.
So that's in the booth, or is that you just send them software to put in their phone?
Well, so typically we'll create the entire experience. So we build a story. We'll go out and actually go on location and film it and create a whole story around it. Then we will put it on the phones and whatnot, and they'll take those to all sorts of different places. They've taken them to the Masters. They've taken them to trade shows around the world. Apparently, it's going to the Olympics here in a few months, which is pretty cool.
Right. So so you shoot a video of some sort?
Yeah. So basically, we work in kind of three different ways to create content. We will create 360-degree photography, still pictures,
right?
360-degree video, and then we'll also do completely computer-generated animation, motion graphics, things like that. Any of those three will actually work in the virtual space.
So can you walk us through, like, when you're selling this into the company, because they probably don't have, they can't go to last year's virtual reality thing and look at it, right? So how do you kind of open their mind to even how to utilize this or leverage this?
Well, you know, interestingly, the best way to actually get somebody on board with using virtual reality is to actually put it on their face.
Right.
So taking an example, and you know, face-to-face meetings are great because you can actually, you know, give it to somebody, show it to them, and you know, let them see what they're really going to experience.
Right.
And most of the work that we do is actually mobile virtual reality. So basically, these are apps that are created, and the smartphone is both the processor and the screen that they're viewing to get the experience. So because of that, a lot of what we do, you mentioned Google Cardboard, those applications actually are in the iTunes Store or on Google Play. So I can send somebody a link and make sure that they have Google Cardboard.
Right.
And then they can download some of our, there's several Foundry 45 applications in the store, and they can go download it themselves and try it out. And that's really the best way to get it across, because you can't really explain it through a 2D video. You kind of have to experience it.
Right. And because it is very immersive, when you put those glasses on, especially if you have the headphones and you're kind of in your own world once you do that.
Yeah, definitely. And the immersive aspect of it is what makes it so powerful, right? The people that we work with, you know, we typically will work with a corporate sales and marketing department, mm-hmm. for example, or we'll also partner with agencies to create these experiences.
Right.
And there's a couple reasons why they actually want to do it. You know, at the kind of lowest level, it's a gee whiz thing. And yeah, it gets more people to come to your booth or to your event or whatnot. And that's great. But that's not really the powerful aspect of it. The reason why the people that we work with care is because when you provide an immersive experience for the prospect or the customer or the end user, they're going to actually listen to your message. So if you have three different value props you want to get across, A, B, and C, or three features and benefits, then putting somebody in the actual experience and seeing it and learning about it by feeling like they're actually there is so much more powerful than throwing a 2D video up on the wall over top
or
of the swag ball.
Or just a PowerPoint, you know.
Yeah, or handing somebody a piece of collateral or, right. or something. You
a
know,
koozie. That, here.
Yeah, exactly.
The footage you shoot for this, though, that's going to be a big piece of it, too, because you don't you have to shoot more footage from different angles to pull all this together?
So it's a great question. It's an interesting production process. For video, for example, the way that we typically will do a 360-degree video is actually with a ball of 7 GoPro cameras. And they're all out, you know, looking in different orientations. And interestingly, the actual production for that is typically easier than when you're doing a 2D video, because with a 2D video, you have to have lights everywhere right. and lots of rigging and whatnot. When you're filming in 360, all that stuff would actually be in the shot. So you have to kind of go with what you can get, you know, get the settings right when you're doing it in the first place. And then the post-production is actually much more complicated.
Right.
Because you have to stitch together all 7 all of those cameras, do lighting and shading. And you know, we do a lot of motion graphics and whatnot after the fact too. So typically there's a lot of prep, you know, to get going with the right. shot, but we've done a bunch of live stuff. We've done a bunch of sports things for basketball and football.
Right,
and
like sports, I would think, lends itself for, like, you know, mountain biking or any of those things where you're kind of,
with movement,
all of a sudden you're plugged yeah. into the world and you're just on the mountain bike.
Yeah, yeah, it's amazing. I actually just got back from shooting 360 video in Alaska, mm-hmm. and we were able to put our rig on the wing of a float plane going over to a glacier. And the footage, I mean, we're just getting to post-producing right. it right now, but the footage is amazing. It feels like you're actually flying through snow-covered mountains into an icy
right. And even,
lake.
Even now, like you mentioned, like you can go to YouTube and download, if you have cardboard,
mm-hmm.
some just amateur footage of something, you know, not as good as your stuff, but something that you get kind of the idea of it.
Yeah, and that's actually a great point. So we, in addition to the work that we do for kind of, you know, corporate sales and marketing efforts, we also have a platform that we've built called VR Forge that allows content creators who don't necessarily know how to actually code to right. create their own virtual reality apps. So there's a huge market out there for production houses, agencies, and even people like individual photographers or videographers, like some of the folks you're saying right there, that can go out and create the content, but they don't really know anything about coding.
Right.
So we can kind of provide some, it's like a content management system, almost like WordPress or something for VR.
And there's only going to be more of that. I mean, now they're rolling out all the Samsung stuff's coming out, and so it's only going to get more and more.
We just got their most recent camera. And we had their 360 camera, and we had to actually order it from South Korea because it's not available
in America
here in the U.S. yet.
How do you get in this business? So there's not like a major in college for virtual reality, or was there? Or did you have real jobs leading up to this? Or what's the backstory?
Well, so basically, at a previous business, I was doing some work with augmented reality. Now, augmented reality is different from virtual reality in that it's overlaying graphics over the real world, whereas virtual reality, you're kind of in a completely different space. The best thing, the example for that is the first down line in a football game. You know, right. it's not actually there on the TV, but right. that's augmented, right? It's augmenting what you're really seeing. So interestingly enough, the tool chain for virtual reality is very similar, right? I mean, you have to ideate and storyboard what you're doing. You have right. to create the content. You have to use, you know, kind of a virtual world creation engine, and then you have to output it to apps. So that was kind of the, you know, when we were several of us got together. One of my current partners was a partner at a previous company of mine, and the other guys are folks that I know from Georgia Tech, and you know, when we sat down and said, what's the next big thing? What do we want to work on? All of our minds have been blown by virtual reality, and it just really looked like the next big thing. So that was, we kind of transitioned from doing this other thing to that. And it's been great. It's crazy how fast it's growing right
yeah,
now.
Yeah. I haven't done it yet, but I'm going to do it at Six Flags. Now they have a roller coaster where you're wearing the, have you done that?
I have not. One of my partners did it recently. And it's funny, we actually just started talking to another group about doing an experience very similar to that for a big event that's coming right. up later this year.
So what did he say that was like? Because that, I mean, now you're feeling the sensations of that, not just seeing it with your eyes and hearing it. Now you're physically feeling it.
But he was
it.
Professionally critical because they didn't do the work.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny that you say that, actually, because, yeah, I mean, it's My first reaction when I view someone else's work is I'm looking for the stitch lines or, right. you know.
Oh, which my
is
not God. Really nice. I can't believe they did that.
There was right. some concern about the how it's actually synced up with right. the timing. But overall, it was cool. I mean, it was an interesting right. experience. Well, and it's neat to see people doing things like that
yeah.
that are outside of just kind of the general, hey, sit here and turn around.
Well, how do you, because there is that gee whiz factor, no matter what you would put in the glasses, right? There's going to be,
right.
for the most people haven't experienced it or they haven't, they're not kind of connoisseurs of this
right.
yet. So it's still new to them. So anything you put in there pretty much is going to be like, oh my God, I've never seen anything like that. As it evolves, how much time do you think that you have to get better in the sense that, okay, that becomes table stakes now, the good experience. Now I got to really move the message. I got to persuade people. I got to kind of get some of the nuance right.
Yeah, that's extremely important. I guess at one level, if you have very interesting content, then it actually trumps the quality of the, you know,
right, because people will be forgiving of that, right?
Right.
They're not going to pay that much attention if they're so immersed and they get blown away by, oh my God, I'm on a glacier, right?
Right, right. We did a recruiting project for the Georgia Tech football team where they have virtual reality headsets. So when their coaches go out and visit the star quarterback in
right.
Dallas, they can bring the headset and say, this is what it's like to actually be at Georgia Tech. This is why you should come here.
Right.
And we were super lucky to be in the end zone for the Miracle on Techwood game where they blocked a field goal at the
right,
very
right.
last second, ran it up. Our camera was 20 feet away from where the guy ran into the end zone. It was the end of the game. It was the last play. We had just been trying to get our batteries working again. One of the seven cameras had died. So thank goodness the black hole that we had from that was actually kind of behind you.
Right.
So it wasn't, and the footage, we're moving around because there's people
right,
streaming over the
right.
side. It's jostling around. And that's not the best setup for virtual reality because it can give you a little bit of motion queasiness. But it's so powerful because you're actually there
on
the field
right.
and it doesn't matter. Nobody cares about the fact that there's a little bit of a hole
right.
here. And
it looks like only six cameras are in use
yeah.
here.
Yeah.
you know, I can't watch this. I can't watch this.
Exactly. But yeah, but it is a good point that the level of content is just always getting better. And at the end of the day, you want to tell a story. I mean, it's just like any medium where you're trying
right.
to get a message across. And as I had said earlier, the reason why we feel it's so powerful is because it's immersive. People will actually listen to your message.
Now, part of it, and it is evolving. I mean, I know I saw a sports special where they're using virtual reality for quarterbacks or having on to see different defenses and then make decisions based on what they're seeing. And they can see it much faster. They can see a lot more plays faster and kind of live it and really feel like, oh, this guy's coming off the edge and stuff like that. So it's evolving in a lot of different ways that people couldn't even anticipate before.
Yeah, definitely.
Now, why did you choose the B2B kind of sector rather than any of the other, you know, millions of
yeah.
places you could have gone with this?
That's a great question. So basically, we wanted to differentiate ourselves there's a ton of people out there that are using virtual reality for gaming.
Right.
And while that is amazing and I love going down that path, that's not something that we wanted to focus on because it's just a different storytelling technique. There's
right.
a different way of actually producing it. And our skill level and skill set was actually in a lot more kind of, we had a lot of B2B experience just from the team that was put together
right.
in our background. And I mean, the reason why we call ourselves Foundry was because we wanted kind of an industrial
right.
feel to make things. And we've got experience in our past lives working with industrial companies. We've got we've done a lot of projects with them. And on the virtual reality front, it's interesting because for those guys, especially if you're in a less sexy business, having another way to get your message across is just, it's even more powerful because it's hard to get somebody to listen. We did a project for a drywall company. And it's hard to get somebody to actually listen to your message around. I mean, it's almost like a cliche, right? You know, oh, it's drywall,
right?
Right? But hey, we were able to make a really interesting story about it. And they had a great experience with it, loved it. And, you know, we'll hopefully do more.
Now, when you're selling somebody in the trade show kind of arena, these people who do trade shows, they do trade shows all the time. So they're always looking for something new and different. So from that side, I can see that would make sense. Hey, this is new and different. But you're also competing against the juggler they had right? Or the shoeshine girl, or the, you know, the celebrity that's taking their picture next to people.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's part of, that's what they're deciding amongst, right?
Yeah, definitely. So there's a couple good things about it. I mean, one is that, yes, it's novel right now. So it's, it,
they're probably the only VR booth. Right.
Yeah. I mean, it's getting more popular. Right. But yeah, I mean, we did one project recently because the CMO of a company we're working with was at South by Southwest, saw virtual reality, said, oh my gosh, I'm not doing virtual reality. Right. I need to be doing virtual reality. So
I'm falling behind.
That was just from seeing it like that. And other people are seeing it on that front too. So that's great. But on top of that, it's like when you create something, you don't have to just use it for one thing.
Right.
Right. So we go and film for the AT&T project. We filmed at their Global Network Operations Center, which is this amazing NASA NORAD looking facility outside New York. And the story we told was what it's like to be an AT&T engineer mitigating a denial of service attack. Well, that's just one story that we told over top of this cool kind of canvas. It could have been anything. I mean, we work with the security group there, so we could have told 20 different stories for 20 different products, and we can still do that on top of that same canvas, the same content.
They can use the content in lots of places, not just at the trade show.
Yeah, and so it's not just, they can use it on YouTube 360 or Facebook 360, but also we typically do a 1-2 punch where we do Samsung Gear VR, which is a pretty high level, it's a partnership between Oculus, which is Facebook, and Samsung. And it's kind of the highest level mobile experience. It's great for face-to-face, but then we partner that with Google Cardboard so that at the show, they can have a giveaway.
And they can brand,
Yeah, it's got their
overprint on top of that,
exactly.
Right?
And then not just is that valuable at the show, but then they give it to their sales guys. So when their sales team is out in the field, they have a leave behind that's actually got the name on it. They have the customer download the app while they're there, show it to them. There's also, these are apps too. So realize there's all sorts of analytics stuff you can do on the back end too to find out how much it's being used, where it's being used, what are people watching. There's just, the sky's the limit.
So, so when you're competing, are there other VR people that are in this space, or you're competing with the juggler or the, kind of the wacky trade show?
Both. Yeah. I mean, more people are getting into the VR space every day. Just because it's been very popular. The drywall company that we worked with actually not only had our virtual reality technology there, they also had a guy there that was using drywall paste or finishing compound and creating artwork, sort of like a fresco on the wall there. So, kind of not a juggler, but close.
Right.
And I guess one more thing that's important from the trade show perspective is just that a lot of the customers we work with want to get away from shipping all of this equipment.
Right.
And
setting up the drywall and that's heavy and expensive and you got to ship it back and it's a pain.
Yeah. If you have a 5,000 pound pump, or a 10,000 pound compressor or something and you have to ship that around just to show off, and you need a 55x50 booth, if instead of that you buy a 10x10 booth and put two chairs in there and have virtual reality, you can actually send somebody to China or India or wherever your facilities are around the world.
Good stuff. So if your ideal client is somebody who does a lot of trade shows, is that who you're looking for?
That's a great client. We like to help people out there. We've done tourism stuff for Carnival Cruise Lines. We've done some real estate work for ICSC, which is a big shopping center consortium. We love doing the sports type work.
Right. Because that really shines. You can really leverage the technology.
Yeah. But that definitely helping corporate marketing departments make a splash and ultimately get more and better qualified leads. That's kind of our bread and butter.
And then how do you get the word out to them? Are you going to trade shows yourself with your stuff?
So we do a lot of direct selling. But we also do spend a lot of time on inbound marketing. We're in the process of updating our website, as I'm sure everybody is, but we're about to launch a new one there. And we do a lot of SEO work and AdWords and whatnot.
So you have your own app for yourself?
Yeah, you can go on iTunes and search for Foundry 45 or the Google Play Store and search for Foundry 45. Our URL is www.foundry45.com.
And then if they go there, they can find lots of stuff just to educate themselves about how it works and how you guys work.
Yeah, yeah. We have a bunch of case studies that we're putting up. We've got a pretty active blog now. We have another site that's thevrforge.com mm-hmm. that's also, that's kind of our product for content creators to be able to build their own products. So
cool.
Yeah.
So the sky's the limit, huh?
Yeah, yeah. We got a lot going on. It's a fun space to be in right now.
Good stuff. Well, thank you so much for being part of the show today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's been great.
This is fun. This is exciting. You knew a little bit more than me, which wasn't too difficult about this whole space, but this has kind of got me jazzed.
I mean, I'm excited when in the movie theater, like right now we all go to the movies with, you know, IMAX 3D glasses. Are we all going to wear these things? I mean, how is that going to work in a movie theater environment?
So there's actually a new technology or new company coming out called The Void, which is essentially, it's almost like a virtual reality movie type thing, you know, that's right. going to be changing over time. So it's a space, you know, think about the guy who has the laser tag space who, you know, needs something new and interesting to do with that. Well, they repurpose it and there's a specific setup and it's just bare walls. And I think they, you know, they'll have some mists and misting machines and whatnot. But basically they put a headset on you. Someone creates content, a story, right? So this week it's the, you know, outer space experience and you hold on to, you know, a toy gun basically, but in your hand, it looks like a real gun. And you have there is a physical space that you have to go through. And then a month later, they change it out and it's the
right in the same exact
Aztec
space. Right.
Experience. It's Indiana right. Jones experience. Right. And you can go out there again and do it again. And the Void, it's going to be amazing.
Now, but at a movie theater, I would think, like, are we going to sit as a group to watch a movie like we do now? You know, where you're in a group of people, there's 200 people at a theater to watch a movie, but are we all going to wear these things where we're all in our own little bubble?
You know, it's interesting. A lot of people are very concerned about the fact that virtual reality is going to be less social, but actually it seems like there's an opportunity for it to be even more social, right? I mean, I think the reason why Facebook may have bought Oculus was because they want to allow all of us sitting in the room here together to watch the Super Bowl
an experience,
on the 50-yard line.
And talk about it.
Right. Or if you and I went to Georgia Tech together, but you live in New York and I live in LA, we want to watch the basketball game.
Right.
Well, we can put on our headsets and watch it together. And I look over to my left and there you are.
Right.
You know?
And you can have courtside seats.
Everybody's right? got courtside
Everybody's
seats.
Everybody's got courtside seats.
Yeah. There's a company called AltSpace VR that is doing some really cool stuff there.
Good stuff. Well, I'm excited to see how this plays out.
I am too. One more time though, contact coordinates, phone number, website address.
Foundry.
Yeah, check us out at Foundry 45, foundry45.com, thevrforge.com. And yeah, you can reach us at 404-441-7101.
Fantastic. Hey, listen, can you hang out with us while we visit with our next guest?
Yeah, definitely. Thanks.
All right. Next up on Atlanta Business Radio this morning, we have with us founder and CEO with Cypress.io, Mr. Brian Mann. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. How's everyone doing?
I'm doing great. Did you learn anything in that last segment?
I did. I think that's really awesome what y'all are doing. I feel like the VR space is kind of like, there's a lot of different ideas. There's a lot of like storming going on and everyone's trying sort of different things. And, you know, probably a few of them will just like get taken up and become like the new mobile experience where it just sort of cascades out to everyone and changes everyone's life. And I think that's like what Facebook's play was with Oculus. Like they just want to be on the cutting edge and come up with new innovative ways for people to experience content. So I think that's really cool.
So what are you guys doing at Cypress.io?
Yeah, well, we're definitely a very different product than what we just heard from Dave. Cypress.io is both a desktop application and is a cloud platform that is aimed at web developers that helps them write automated tests for the web. And this is a very technical product. So I'm sure unless you've been a developer for years, you probably have no idea what is automated testing. Well, just imagine, you know, this is a product aimed at other programmers, right? So if you're a programmer, you're on a team of other developers, whether it's 2, 3, 4, 5, and maybe you're at a small company, maybe you're at a larger company, and you're also collaborating with other teams of developers. Well, you're writing, you know, anywhere between 100 lines to 1,000 lines of code a day, and you're checking that into a big project. And so over time, the complexity of what you're doing just builds up. And how in the world do you verify that what you're writing is actually working. How do we constantly release and improve our products without it just becoming shabbles of bugs? And we do that in the industry. The industry standard way to do that is by writing automated tests, where basically a computer, you write code that verifies that your code itself does the thing that you intended to do, that it works. And in our space, we focus on web developers. So our software helps developers drive a web browser exactly like a user would do, like visit this link, fill out this form, click this button, and verify that a certain condition is met. And Cypress does that in a very innovative way that's very different than sort of the existing tools. And what we've seen is just over the last few years, the web has become an incredibly more powerful medium for getting content across. So, you know, if you're working on a web application, those have become more and more and more powerful over the years. And the existing tools that we've been using, you know, really sort of were invented, you know, circa 2004. And they just don't work very well now for a much more rich modern web. So our sweet spot of the users using Cypress is that they're building web applications, modern applications, and employing, you know, modern development techniques. And they would use our software to help them write automated tests.
So it helps them get to market faster because it's correcting mistakes kind of as you go along in a more efficient manner.
Yeah. You know,
I have a problem right now that I'm having with the software.
Just the
with
one?
An app. Well, this is very timely. I use a Polar heart rate monitor when I work out, and there's an app called Polar Beat, and they tried to help us by having a new version of this come out. The update came out, right?
Sure, of course.
And then the update doesn't sync with my Google Fit that shares that data with other apps that I use. And the screen turns off in 20 seconds when it used to stay on all the time. So like, that's a mistake, right?
Sure, sure. I mean,
that could have been possibly corrected.
If it was working at one point and then it broke, that's called a regression, right? And
but I mean, like Polar's not a little company.
Sure, sure. I mean, this is a problem that's across the entire industry. I mean, we're not necessarily convincing people to test. Testing is what we've been doing for decades now. But every company has to devise their own testing strategy based on their products, based on their users, and what they're trying to do. This is the only way that we ensure that we don't have regressions, that we can continuously release and improve software without it just completely falling down. You can employ testing a lot of different ways. What a lot of companies do is they just hire an entire QA department. But that's extremely expensive, and it really only
solves... So their job is just to try to break it.
But... Yeah, I mean, they would do a lot of manual testing, right? I mean, manual testing is absolutely still a valid form of testing. But the feedback loop isn't really there. I mean, if you're a developer and you're writing tests as you code, that is the fastest way for you to get feedback, to find out something broke. And in fact, you know, testing goes way beyond just, you know, a simple red and green light about whether something works or not. It's also the way that developers can actually like iterate and improve their own code. It is like code quality first.
Do developers like this, or is this slowing them down because it's getting in the way of their process?
Well, so traditionally, I mean, this is why we entered this space, right? Is that the existing tools that existed before Cypress were incredibly flaky. They were incredibly brittle. Oftentimes, it took longer to write a passing test than it did to just write the actual feature. And so what Cypress is Cypress is software that is built definitely for developers, not necessarily for QA people. And it matches sort of their typical development environment. It doesn't make them have to switch context or learn a different flow. They can just develop as they normally would and test all at the same time. So it's much more fast. It's much faster, and it actually matches their expectations as their day-to-day development goes.
Now, how'd you come up with this? Is this because you were going through a project and you're like,
Jennifer came up with it. He's just taking credit.
Yeah. great question. I mean, this is, I think, my ninth year of development. So a lot of this came from just my own personal experience leading.
When you say experience, you mean scar tissue?
Yeah, definitely. Years ago, you know, I led teams of developers. I watched new developers basically struggle to learn how to do testing. And I just saw firsthand in my own projects, you know, leading them, what an immense challenge this was. Then a few years ago, I got a chance to work with some really cutting edge technology. And I really wanted
to... Was it virtual reality?
No.
Isn't that the only cutting edge technology?
It's one of them. So I learned this technology and I got a chance to work with it, you know, sort of way before, you know, the market had completely adopted it. And I wanted to teach other developers. I'm really passionate about teaching and communicating with other developers. So I did a screencast series. A screencast series is basically where you go and you record your screen. Generally, it's employed to help teach other developers like what's going on. So it's like you're coding and you're recording your screen.
Are they like talking smack to you as you're coding?
No, it's not. It's not live. That's something different. That's actually really cool too. Like a Twitch TV and stuff. That's actually starting to get really popular as well. But no, this is like heavily produced. Like I had a script and I would write it all and record the screen and do like thousands of edits. I'm sure y'all could appreciate that. I bought a little Yeti mic. It was great. Anyway, so I went through this screencast series and I had thousands of developers go through this. So this was kind of like my first commercial project aimed at other developers. Like the free videos online, I mean, we've had like over 100,000 views from, you know, unique developers. And the number one question I got was about testing. It was like, you know, developers all over the world, they all sort of identified with the same pain points that they were struggling to write automated tests. They were frustrated with the tools. And so really, I saw this as an opportunity, as in like, oh, great, let me do a new screencast series that just focuses on testing. Like, this is great. This is a great market to be in. And when I actually tried producing the first few episodes and working with the existing tools, there was just no way that it was going to work. There was no way that you could actually create a process that was going to work for the developers with these existing tools. So that's kind of like when the light bulb went off in my head and I was like, you know, I wonder if I can actually create a service that could be used by all the different development shops out there that actually worked for them. And so a little over 2 years ago, that's when I started Cypress, wrote the first line of code, and I guess here we are today.
Are you self-funded or do you have investors?
The first year and a half was completely bootstrapped from the ground up. I read two key books, Lean Startup and Hot Seat, that definitely did a lot for me in the sense of understanding, you know, getting validated, learning, talking to customers, building an MVP. So I sort of did all that by myself. You know, I was able to leverage the large group of developers that I'd already sold to and worked with the screencast series to kind of get their feedback.
And Jennifer's then, 401. I keep trying to give Jennifer some.
You're
love
trying
here.
To get her in there. Jennifer is your wife.
Yeah, Jennifer's my wife. So we're like a development team. I would say
husband and wife team.
Husband and wife
There's
team.
There's probably a lot of those out there, right?
Yeah.
Short list.
So she's a developer and a designer. She actually used the MVP of Cypress for over a year at the company that she was with. So she kind of was like our number one. Early adopter,
raving
beta
fan.
Yeah, she wrote about like I think 4,500 tests or so. So we were able to really push the product pretty hard from that. So after about 18 months, we got to the point where we had an MVP, we had early adopters, we had companies using this and really excited. And it just kind of like hit me: there was no way that I could continue to do this on my own. It was way too complicated and technical of a product. And I knew I needed to hire an entire team of developers. So that was when I started, you know, actually raising money. You know, we had a lot of contacts out in San Francisco, which is not really surprising. That's actually where a lot of our early adopters are. So I took a trip out there. I talked to some investors in VC, because this is my first time actually raising money. So we had some interest from San Francisco. And then at the same time, I came back and worked with local Atlanta investors.
Did the San Francisco people want you to relocate?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. No question about it. It was you had to be there and you had to be all in. So,
you're here now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Atlanta, I've been here, you know, 10, 11 years. And over the course of that, you know, we've been really active and engaged in the Atlanta local community. In fact, my co-founder and I, Randall, we run the Atlanta JavaScript meetup. So we're always doing things sort of in this ecosystem as is. We have a lot of contacts and a lot of developers that we've both personally worked with. So it made sense to just stay here. It was actually, I think, a much less risky move. And I mean, Atlanta has wonderful resources for running a startup that's in the technology space.
So how does the sales and marketing thing work? Do you do trade shows? Do you get on the phone? Is your phone ringing? How are you getting new business?
Well, I don't think developers talk on the phone anymore.
That's true.
We have an immense amount of just buzz and pressure and people that are using us. I mean, it's the kind of thing that if you really, truly solve a problem, this is one of these like hoverboard problems. It's like, everyone knows that they have this problem. Everyone is aware of it, but it is an incredibly technically challenging thing in order to solve. So I would just say, you know, this is actually my third radio show about this. We've been invited to international conferences. We have early adopters that write blog posts and like teach other people how to use our product. This is something everyone is really excited about. We've already had interest from Google, from Mozilla, from a lot of big brand companies, because like I said, everyone understands what this problem is.
And this is one of those situations where in this world, once the word gets out that something's good, people share this information. They don't keep it in a silo. This is the stuff that gets spread.
Yeah, I mean, this our whole product, the channel of it is basically open source, right? And we're trying to become, you know, a ubiquitous platform, something that really solves this incredibly complicated problem. That everyone can then extend in their own unique ways that they can build into their systems. And we have seen other products do exactly this and be very successful at it. So we are just kind of following that model, making it open source, making it extensible, you know, being very opinionated, helping people learn how to test, what are the testing best practices, so on and so forth. So we're trying to be champions.
Right, you want to be a champion, but you have to be open to other people taking it and putting their own spin on it in order to make it better, right?
But it's
a balance. That's the...
That's like a healthy part of every product sort of growing and maturing. Right. You know, there's no way that one perspective could possibly be enough to really solve this problem. People are going to take it and they're going to stretch it and extend it in the way that best fits what they're doing. But I mean, as far as our business model is concerned, this isn't a conflict of interest because, you know, Cypress itself, like the product that developers use, is a desktop application. It's something that they have to install and work on their local computer, right? And what they do with that is completely up to them. We want them to extend that and improve it and develop on it. But then our platform is the thing that basically is, you know, where our revenue model comes in. And ultimately, the way that it works is that, you know, you're using Cypress and you're writing your tests every single day. And then little by little, that test suite grows, especially if other team members are happening. You know, you're writing, you know, 10, 20, 50 new tests a day. Well, it's not too long before you get into the thousands. And in our industry, what we do is that we have a process called continuous integration. And what that means is that when you're writing your tests locally, after you commit your code, all those tests from all the developers, you know, get aggregated together and they're run independently of your machine. And that's how you can verify that something doesn't just work on your machine, that you're not coupling yourself to like your own system dependencies and requirements. And that's actually where our cloud platform runs. And our cloud platform is basically going to automatically spin up browsers in the cloud. It's going to record the video, take screenshots, handle all those logs. And then when there are failures, we feed all that information back into the desktop client. So then you can basically drive into the source of failure and get insight into what's going on. I mean, it's sort of like writing tests is hard enough, but then when failures are happening just, you know, in your continuous integration platform and not in your local computer, it's almost impossible to debug. And that's where a lot of developers just lose faith in testing altogether. They're like, wow, I spent months writing all these tests, but now they're randomly failing on this other machine. And when I go to inspect and debug this, I can't figure it out. I don't want to deal with this anymore. So that's sort of where our platform fits in.
So what's next for you guys? Just keep... Now you got some money though, right?
Yeah. We raised $600,000 with three VC companies here in Atlanta. Blake Patton was our lead with TechSquare Ventures, followed by BIP Capital and BLH. We pretty much, our runway is, we have a little bit past the end of the year. So right now we're in beta. We have, you know, active users using us all the time. We're just going to continue to iterate with them, get their feedback, understand exactly what's the most important features to build. And from that point, we're a team of five developers right now, or actually five full-time employees, four of which are developers. Anyway, so after we continue to iterate with early adopters, we're going to get out of beta by the end of the year and then look to actually raising a Series A. After that point, we'll just continue to ride the investment, grow out our team, and diversify the product.
And then what do you need more of right now?
Well, we need more developers. We need more help, more just horsepower to the actual product.
So you're looking, everybody's looking for developers, right?
Yeah, I mean, we're pretty much, I mean, we could probably hire some contractors. We're kind of tapped out as far as our budget is concerned. I mean, we're kind of like on our plan and it's working well. But I mean, I just mean in general, this is a really complicated type thing. You know, we've got four engineers, you know, other companies kind of in the space, you know, they might have 100. And so we're, you know, developing our product and doing our thing. Once we do raise more money, it's going to be nice to expand the team.
And if somebody wanted to learn more, it's cypress.io.
That's right. We've got a demo of the product on there. We have a ton of documentation. And yeah, if you're interested, just there's a form to fill out to become an early adopter. And, you know, every single week we invite more beta users.
Good stuff. Well, Brian, thank you so much for being part of the show.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you, Dave.
Thanks much.
And Randall, you were perfect. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.